Good afternoon. The time, 12:05 in the p.m., 12:06 now. The place, Nevada City, California. The station, KVMR-FM, broadcasting out of Nevada City, California. Your host is Chamba Lane. The name of the show is Rabble Rousing. Okay, gang, it's a special week. This is a pledge drive show. And Che got one more pledge, and this is from Donna Graham, and she thinks Che is wonderful. There's no accounting for taste. Okay, guys, on KVMR, what we do reflects who we are. All the broadcasters drink spoken word and public affairs of passion and want to see a saner, more compassionate world. So do you, or you wouldn't be listening. So do your part. Phone in your pledge and help us pay the bills, keep us on the air, playing the music you love, and inviting you to think about things the government would prefer that you don't think about. We've got some good previews today, and I think we have a very interesting show. Premiums. Okay, today's show is going to mainly focus on single-payer health care. If you don't think health care is a problem, then you've got a lot more money than most of us. So we are going to talk about single-payer health care. We have some very interesting guests that are going to talk to you about that. And we also have some very interesting premiums, gifts for you if you make a contribution. And those are the gifts are going to be books, and they're going to be good books to help you understand single-payer health care and also to help you convince your friends and relatives who might be uninformed. This is going to be a grassroots issue. Barack Obama made wonderful promises, and he's not coming through on them. I think it goes back to what when he quoted Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that he believes in a lot of the things that advocates believe in, but you're going to have to make him do it. Well, we're going to have to make Congress get us reasonable health care, and that reasonable health care seems like it's going to be single-payer health care. Senator Max Baucus of Montana is the head of the main committee, and he's stonewalling. He's being forced gradually, step by step. And so we're going to try and have an interesting guest. Steve Baker is on the phone now arranging it. Martha, are you there?
I am.
All right. We're pleased to have Martha Livingston as our guest. And we're going to talk about single-payer health care today. So first of all, Martha, briefly, who are you and what qualifies you to talk about single-payer health care?
I mean, I think every American is qualified to talk about single-payer health care because we confront such horrors when we're simply trying to get health care, and nobody should have to confront those. Who I am apart from that is I'm vice chair of the New York Metro chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program. I teach health policy. I've lived in Canada and studied and received their health care. And I'm co-editor of a book called 10 Excellent Reasons for National Health Care.
Okay, and that book happens to be one of the books we're offering as a premium. And as I told my listeners before you came on the air, this show is primarily focused at changing people's minds concerning single-payer health care. I've looked over your book. It's an excellent thing that our listeners can hand to their friends, relatives, and neighbors and say, hey, read this and get involved.
That's great. I appreciate your saying that. Unlike many books, it's little, it's skinny, it uses small words in big type. And there's even some cartoons, and there's a lot of information at the back about how people can get involved.
Okay, and it's very concise. It's very well done.
That's the point.
Let's start with the biggest myth of all that the opponents of single payer, they cite Canada. They say, we don't want Canada's system. You've lived in Canada. You're familiar with Canada's system. Will you please, if you can, dispel that myth about the horrors of Canadian single-payer medicine?
What I'd like to do is to come at this in two different directions. One is nobody's healthcare system is perfect. Every other rich, democratic, capitalist country in the world has got some form of national health coverage for its people. Canada is one of those. Nobody else spends more than around 10% of their gross domestic product. In English, that means they don't spend more than about $4,300 a person, even in the most expensive other systems. We spend 16% of our gross domestic product, which means one out of every six health care dollars in our economy is spent on health care, $7,200 for every man, woman, and child in the U.S., and yet tens of millions of us can't get health care when we need it. So that's just sort of the bottom line. That's the backdrop.
Okay.
Is Canada's health care system perfect? It is not. Do sometimes, occasionally, people have to wait for non-urgent services that should be provided faster? Yes. Is anybody's health care system perfect? No. Canada's system, however, is the most popular health care system in the world. Why? Because the vast majority of Canadians will tell you, I can get health care when I need it. And not just primary care. People can get complex, world-class treatment, and they don't pay out of pocket.
Okay. Great.
One other point would be that there's this rumor, this myth that Canadians stream across the border to get care in the U.S. that they can't get in Canada. That's simply not true. We know the numbers, and the numbers are small.
Okay, and I believe you're based in New York, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so you're up near the Canadian border. You certainly would be aware of that. We down here in California might not be that aware of that. But we do have listeners all over the country and all over the world. John Conyers is the champion in the Congress of single-payer health care. Now, in the past, he has disappointed me in some of his lack of follow-through on some of the things he's promised. Regarding single-payer health care, what is your opinion of John Conyers and his efforts on single-payer health care?
I think John Conyers is a hero on this issue. I was privileged to be able to hear him in New York City just a few days ago, and he has really been the champion of national health insurance, what we call improved expanded Medicare for all. And John Conyers has really been the leader on this in the House of Representatives.
Okay.
So I have nothing but good things to say about him, and you'll notice that he provided an introduction to the book, 10 Excellent Reasons for National Health Care.
Right. Okay, but he's actually being proactive and active in the Congress in moving this bill forward.
Oh, incredibly so. He asked us, by the way, and I'll ask your listeners, to badger a few people in Congress who haven't stepped up, and that would be your own Congressman Henry Waxman, who's
really
chair of Energy and Commerce. And he needs to call a hearing on single-payer health care and hasn't done so. And Charles Rangel, who's in my state, who's the chair of Ways and Means, and he needs to call a hearing on single-payer health care and hasn't. I'd be pleased to give phone numbers for those folks.
Sure.
Waxman is 202-225-3976. That's 225-3976. And Rangel is 202-225-4365.
And specifically, if anybody feels strongly on this issue and they want to phone either of these two representatives, what should they be asking for?
What we're specifically asking for is that they hold a hearing on single-payer health care. Another thing that we want is for the Congressional Budget Office to cost out single-payer, which they haven't been asked to do by too many congressmen thus far, because we know that if we cost it out and stack it up against any of these other plans, that we absolutely, hands down, have the goods. Our system, our plan, unlike anybody else's, actually takes the money that's already in our incredibly expensive health care system and uses it to buy health care. Why are we in this pickle is really the question. We're spending far more than everybody else on the planet, and yet we're not getting health care for our money. Why is that? Because unlike Germany, Switzerland, France, Japan, Australia, all those other countries, we rely on a for-profit system of insurance that stands between us and our doctors and makes it difficult or impossible for us to get care. If we had single payer and got those guys out of the mix, we would save $400 billion a year, which is plenty of money to cover every American for all the health care we need. What are we waiting for?
Okay, Martha, I want to approach two different things. One, what are the reasons given by the opponents of single payer? And secondly, what are the real reasons?
Well, when you say opponents, are you speaking of people in Congress who are not supportive?
Well, the majority of the American people are in support, and the congressional representatives are not listening to them.
That's correct.
What is the argument that our congressmen are putting up why they're not in favor of something that we want them to do?
You know what's interesting about that is nobody, at least on the Democratic side, I can't speak for the Republicans, but nobody on the Democratic side has anything to say against single payer. They all say, I'm not making this up, they say, of course single payer is the best idea, but it's not politically feasible.
What does that mean, it's not politically feasible?
That means they are too timid to do what they know is the right thing. That's what that means. I'll tell you something.
Wait. What does timid mean? You mean they're afraid they're not going to get campaign contributions and not get reelected and not keep their cushy jobs? Is that what you mean?
I mean, I guess that's part of it. I think that most of them are not totally, I don't like to go totally cynical here. I think some of them are good people, and they just don't see themselves as being out front on an issue that they don't see people knocking down their doors demanding. And that's what we have to do. That's our job.
Yeah, I mean, one of the basic problems is every congressperson has government-sponsored health care. They've got a terrific health care system. They don't need it. Their family doesn't need it. So one could suppose that they're totally out of touch with the needs of the American people. So what you're saying is the American people have to beat on their doors, correct?
Well, I think so. But let me make a point about what congresspeople have. You know, federal employees buy into the Federal Employees Benefit Plan, and they have hundreds of different plans, and they can choose their plan. And you want to hear something truly shocking? Is over 20% of federal employees are uninsured because they can't afford any of those plans. So your congressperson can buy a private plan. That's what they're just private plans. But many of the employees of the federal government can't even afford to be insured, and over 20% of them are uninsured.
So Congress people have to buy private plans? They're not given government?
That's right.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
Yeah. I mean, if they're over 65, then they're in Medicare.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right. Is it the common viewpoint is that a lot of Congress people are simply bought off, Max Baucus being the prime example of somebody that received enormous campaign contributions from the healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm.
Is this primarily about money? Are Congress people simply bribed to not go for single payer?
Look, I think that's a piece of it. I think that what I would say is those folks have to raise enormous funds to do their campaigning. And who is, where do they get their money from? They get it from big industry. They get it from the people with the deepest pockets. And those are the wealthy and the major corporations. You're talking here about one-sixth of our economy. You're talking about the pharmaceutical industry as well as the health insurance industry and the medical suppliers and such. And yes, that is certainly a factor. It is certainly a factor. If your listeners have ever seen Michael Moore's movie Sicko, he had one funny moment where he had all these Congress people with little balloons over their heads saying how many dollars they had gotten from the insurance industry.
Okay. Let me interrupt here to remind listeners this is a pledge drive show. This is a pledge drive. You already know how unique KVMR is, how hard it is to find the news and information you need in order to be a knowledgeable and contributing citizen in our society. Do you care? Pick up your phone right now and give us your pledge to support KVMR Community Radio. It's your country, it's your community, it's your radio station. So please, phone in your contribution. The in-studio the numbers are 265-9555 and toll-free 1-800-355-5867. And for people listening on the Internet, there's a way to contribute on the Internet. And I want to thank Paul Power of Nevada City, California, for his donation. Thank you very much. But I want to hear more of them. This is your chance. I meet a lot of people on the streets, and they tell me how much they enjoy rabble-rousing, how much they enjoy my radio show. Thanks. That makes my ego feel really good. But what would feel even better is for you to support this radio station. 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. Okay, Mary. Martha, sorry.
Co-author is Mary O'Brien, I'm Martha Livingston, that's where that happened.
That's my confusion. It would also help if I could read my own handwriting.
Let me also say to your listeners, we have a community radio station in New York where I am, and we think that it's a real lifeline because you're not going to get this kind of information from the corporate-sponsored media. So it's precious, and whatever I can do, I support my station, and I hope your listeners will support yours.
Great, thank you. Why did you and Mary write the book? Or you edited the book. Why did you do that?
We did that. Well, we were approached by the publisher to come up with this, and what we really wanted to do was to provide an easy to read, easy to understand, little, lightweight volume that really gives people the kinds of answers that you need. You know, this is not a hard issue, but a lot of times the enemies of our issue will say, oh, you can't possibly understand this. You are not a health policy expert. Why, our experts know better. And they say, blah, 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 you can't have national health insurance or whatever it is they say. And people get intimidated. You know, I've got a PhD. Not everybody out there has a PhD. You don't have to be literate to understand this issue. This is a justice issue. It is wrong in the richest country in the world, where we are spending far more than anybody else on the planet on health care. It is wrong that over 20,000 Americans die every year because we can't get the health care we need when we need it. It is wrong.
Okay.
Millions of Americans are declaring bankruptcy, and 62% of Americans who declared bankruptcy in 2007, the last year we have the numbers for, 62% went bankrupt because they couldn't get, because they had a health problem and they either didn't have insurance or three-quarters of them had insurance, and the insurance simply didn't cover them.
So the bottom line is they were bankrupted primarily because they couldn't pay for their health care.
They were bankrupted by this rotten health care system.
Okay.
And I was on a national call-in show the other day, and a young man from Indiana called in and spoke about the fact he had paid $120 a week for insurance, and when his wife got seriously ill, they wound up having to declare bankruptcy because the insurance company weaseled out of paying what they were supposed to have paid. It was disgusting, and he was just one example of those close to a million Americans who find ourselves in that situation every year.
Okay.
It's a disgrace.
In support of what you've just said, In the beginnings of your book, you have a wonderful quote from Martin Luther King, Jr. I want to read it now. Of all the forms of inequality, injustice in health care is the most shocking and inhumane. Martin Luther King, Jr., and of course that was written many years ago, and unfortunately it's still true.
It is, and it's wrong that it's still true. You know, we've been trying to get national health care for many years. Back in the 60s, we got a compromise, and that was Medicare, which works pretty well for our seniors. And we got Medicaid, which works somewhat well for some of our poor and low-income working people in this country. But what we really need is a system that covers everybody for everything we need. And you don't have to beg for your care. You don't have to go bankrupt. You don't have to decide, can I pay the mortgage, or can I buy food for my kids, or can I pay to
right.
go see a doctor?
You know,
just crazy that we're in this situation.
Okay, one of the interesting things that I've read in this is if we had single-payer health care and everybody was in the same pool, that it would work out far differently than it is now. Could you explain that?
Well, when you say everybody's in the same pool, that's how insurance works. That's how other countries are able to do this. Everybody's in the pool, and most of the time, most of us don't need very much health care. Most of us are healthy most of the time, and the minority of people need the care. So if everybody's in the same system, the healthy are subsidizing the sick against such time as we all are going to need care when we get sick, and then the system will work for us. What we have now is a for-profit system where the insurance companies are masters of figuring out who they don't want to cover. It's called cherry picking. They pull out the healthy and cover them. They avoid covering the sick, and they make a bundle by doing this.
Okay.
Very clever what they do. Let me say one other thing about this. This is so hard to imagine. When we talk about spending money on health care, the insurance industry refers to that as a loss. They call the amount of money they actually have to spend for health care the medical loss ratio. And they brag about how much of our money they get to keep by denying us care when we need it.
Okay.
That's just offensive.
Okay. I have to interrupt here to remind our listeners that it is 12:32 in the p.m. You're listening to KVMR-FM, broadcasting out of Nevada City, California. Your host is Chamba Lane. The name of the show is Rabble Rousing. We're pleased to have as our guest today Martha Livingston. She is the editor of a small, very concise, very well-written book called 10 Excellent Reasons for National Health Care. And that book is available to you as a premium if you become a member or renew or in any way contribute to KVMR. That's one of the books that's available. There's also a book, Healthcare Meltdown, by Robert H. LeBeau. And we urge you to phone in your pledge. Oh, and if you don't want to receive a premium and you want to donate that money to one of the local food banks, we would be delighted to arrange that for you as well. So please call in your pledges, 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. Martha, I wanted to talk about some of the other myths. And one of them is that, oh, my God, if we had single payer, we would lose our choice of doctors. Is that true?
Gosh, nothing could be further from the truth. We have the least choice of doctors in this country compared to every country that has universal health care. If I want to go to a doctor, I've got to, and I'm well covered. I'm a professor. I'm a state employee. I have to see, is this doctor on my plan? Or I have to look in my bank account and see, do I have a sack full of money to bring to that doctor's office? Every other country has complete choice of health care provider. Complete. If I get sick in Montreal, and I decide I want to go to a doctor in Vancouver, I have that right. So
okay.
That's absolutely not the issue. What we are getting confused by is people saying that Americans want choice. We know we want choice. We absolutely want choice. But they, as the president says, they want a choice of health plan. I don't actually need a choice of health plan. I need a health plan that will pay the bill when I need health care. End of story. The choice I want is a choice of doctor, the choice of hospital, and so forth.
Okay. Different countries have slightly different systems. You've spoken about Canada. The United Kingdom has a slightly different system. Could you briefly explain the difference?
The United Kingdom, unlike many of the other systems in the rich capitalist world, has a national health service. This is not what we're advocating for. We're advocating for what most of the countries have, which is national health insurance, which simply means that, like Medicare, they pay the bill and they leave the delivery of care completely in private hands. So nothing would change if we went to such a system, except that we would no longer personally have to bring our checkbooks with us when we went to the doctor, because we would already have paid for our care through some form of taxation, partly through income tax, partly through a payroll tax on employers. Those would be the major ways that we would fund health care. Health care is not free. People have to pay for it. The way they pay for it in all those other countries is a more fair and equal way, which is by taxes that go on the basis of how much you make.
Okay.
We estimate that that nobody in the U.S. making less than $250,000 a year would pay any more than we already pay now. And, in fact, something like 95% of us would pay less than we pay now when we look at taxes and our premiums and our out-of-pocket payments and so forth.
Okay. And then in addition to that, the people that can't afford any health insurance, they would now have health care coverage. That would cut down on the people visiting the very expensive emergency rooms and emergency room services, and that would be a net savings for everyone.
That's a net savings because emergency room care is very expensive, but it's also not always all about money. We're talking about having a relationship with a doctor or other primary care provider who's somebody who knows us, knows our families, knows our history, knows what we are like medically and what we're like as human beings. And what happens with our private system is that most of us who have insurance get it through our employer. If our employer decides, sorry, I'm not choosing company A anymore, I'm going to company B to save some money, then we're out of luck and we may have to find another doctor.
You know, there's
that's something that Americans face, and nobody in England, Canada, Taiwan, Switzerland, you know, wherever.
Okay.
Nobody else has to deal with that.
I heard of a very interesting argument in conjunction with this, and that is if we had single-payer health care paid by the government, which means paid by everyone, employers would not have to spend money on private health care plans, and they would thus be more competitive with foreign businesses, and so it would be a benefit to employers. I've never heard that argument before.
We think that that's true, but remember that some employers, now I think people, the employers who are now providing very good care, which is fewer and fewer every year because care, the price of care of insurance goes up every year, and more employers have to stop providing it. Those who now do provide care, coverage rather, would almost definitely be paying less than they're currently paying, and that would put us at a greater competitive advantage. There are lots of employers who now can't afford to cover their employees,
right,
and they would be paying some, even though they're not paying now, but they would be in a position of being able to attract employees who may not want to go work for them because they don't have benefits.
Right. Okay. We need to interrupt to thank Susan Lane for a generous contribution, and this is very sweet. Susan says that this contribution is a birthday gift in honor of her daughter. What a sweet way to honor your daughter's birthday. Thank you so much, Susan. And she's from Grass Valley. Okay, guys, the rest of you need to come to the plate. This is a pledge drive show. You enjoy many things on KVMR, and now is your chance to thank us in return. Please phone in your pledge, your donation, your contribution, your support, 265-9555 or 1-800-355-5867. And if for any reason you want to contribute this entire week but not on this show and you feel like mentioning Rabble Rousing when you make your contribution, that would be most appreciated. Martha, why are doctors in favor of single payer?
Oh, what a good question. Well, we found that the majority of U.S. doctors support this system because they are actually devoting an enormous amount of time, money, and energy to fighting with insurers to be able to provide the care that they and their patients want. And they have staff in their offices whose job it is to be on the phone with insurance companies constantly. And it looks as though, I think a recent study found that something like 2 to 3 months out of every doctor's year of work is devoted to paperwork and arguing with insurance companies rather than providing health care, which is what they want to be doing. I didn't go into business to be a bill collector. I went into business to provide medical care to patients.
Let me give a personal example of that. I recently went in to see a local specialist concerning a small problem I had, and I asked him if he took Medi-Cal, and he said, no, it's too much hassle, it's too much paperwork, I'm going to do the procedure for you for free. Because it's easier for me to just do it than to try and collect for Medi-Cal. There's that much paperwork involved. I was shocked. So
that's a pretty shocking statement, and I'll contrast it with doctors that I've met in Canada who, you know, I asked one doctor to look at his practice and tell me how much time it took him and his office to bill the provincial what they called their Medicare system. And he did the math, and he figured out that they probably spend 45 minutes a week. Now, that's contrasted with having full-time people on the phone with insurance companies every single day. And what he said was they send in the information online, and they get a check in the mail a few weeks later. End of story. He ended his conversation with me by saying, tell your American doctors that if they had the system we have, they would think they had died and gone to heaven.
That's pretty powerful.
That's pretty powerful language. This is from a primary care doctor in Victoria, British Columbia.
Okay. We want to interrupt to thank Robert Parvin of Carson City, Nevada. Robert is made a contribution, and he says to tell Chamba that he enjoys him and listens online. Robert, thank you very much. We appreciate that. And for anyone else that wants to join Robert and join many other listeners, 265-9555 or 1-800-355-5867. Let's get back to politics, because politics is really the engine that's going to drive this one way or another. You mentioned to me that this is a pretty important week in Congress as far as single payer. Would you explain that?
Well, what's been going on is that Congress is in the process of designing a plan, and the plan they're designing is nothing that any of us would like to have. And they will bring it out with great fanfare and say that more Americans will be able to get health insurance. And what they're proposing, it looks like to us briefly, is that all Americans would be required to buy private health insurance plans There'd be some subsidies for people who can't afford it. But in other words, we're going to be throwing billions and billions of dollars at the wasteful, greedy private health insurance industry. And that will cost us many billions more over the next year. The piece that many people may have heard of is what's called a public plan option, that if people would prefer, they could buy into a public plan, similar to what we are asking for, but that we want for everybody. The problem with that is that the insurers are so clever at not covering the sick that we worry that what will happen is the sick who can't get into the private plan will go into the public plan. And you know how insurance works. If all you have in your plan is sick people, that plan is doomed to fail. And when it fails, because it has to, then people will say, you see, the government can't do anything right.
Okay.
And that would be really, frankly, a disaster.
Okay.
We can't afford to spend another 10 years getting this wrong and then coming back and fixing this again. Congressman Conyers said the other day, said people say to him, I want this for my children and grandchildren. And he said, you know what? I want it for me. I want it now.
Okay.
And that's how I feel about it.
Okay. There's an article I want to read here that addresses this issue. This was by Robert Perry. It's called 119 Million Americans Must Be Wrong. As the health insurance industry and its defenders in Congress lay out their case against permitting a public option in a reform bill, perhaps their most curious argument is that some 119 million Americans are ready to dump their private plans and to jump to something more like Medicare, and that's why the choice can't be permitted. In other words, the industry and its backers are acknowledging that more than one-third of the American people are so dissatisfied with their private health insurance that they trust the U.S. government to give them a fairer shake on health care. The industry says its allies in Congress must prevent that. The peculiar argument is that 119 million Americans must be denied the public option that they prefer, and this has been made most notably by Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, ranking Republican on the Senate Finance Committee, which is one of the two panels that has jurisdiction over the health insurance bill. He's quoted as saying, as many as 119 million Americans would shift from private coverage to the government plan. That migration, he said, would put America on the path toward a completely government-run healthcare system. Evidently, the government plan would overtake the government plan would overtake the entire market. Close quote. Grassley's logic is that so many Americans would prefer a government-run plan that the private health insurance industry would collapse or become a shadow of its current self. That, in turn, would lead even more Americans entering the government plan, making private insurance even less viable. Rarely has an argument more dramatically highlighted the philosophical question of whether, in a democracy, the government should represent the people's interests or an industry's interests. That was Robert Perry.
Beautiful article, don't you think?
I think so. I think it's very strong and very compelling. What so other...
The difference between what Perry is saying and what we are saying, though, is that we want to jump to that government insurance all at once. We don't want a public plan option in a sea of private health insurance. We know the private health insurance industry doesn't want a public plan option, but we want them out of the mix, because only by getting them out of the mix do we save the money that we can then use to cover all Americans for all the treatment that we need without spending more than we're already spending.
Okay, Martha, let's cut to the chase. How are we going to achieve that when we don't have a direct vote on this? We have elected representatives that supposedly represent us, and they're being paid off by these various industries. How are we going to achieve it?
We have to give them hell. We just have to be on them 24/7. Who's your congressperson in your district?
Oh, boy.
You know?
No, we finally got rid of a rotten one. We've got a less rotten. Tom McClintock is in our district.
So, folks, you got to get on McClintock. Is he on the bill?
Thank him
for being on the bill. And say we want to see you provide more leadership. If he's not on the bill, there are 78 co-sponsors, along with Congressman Conyers. If he's not on the bill, then demand that he get on the bill. How do we do that? We call, we fax, we write letters, we email, we have people come to their, to his office, just be there physically at his home office. You know what? Enough people do that, he will sit up and take notice.
Yeah, my...
If we even... Yeah.
My own personal feeling is rather than going to his office, I think people should camp out on his front lawn, park in front of his house.
That's another possibility. The point is to say, hey, you're not on this yet? Why not? This is what the American people want. Which side are you on? It's time to make a decision. Are you on the side of the healthcare industry and the pharmaceutical industry, or are you on the side of the American people? That's really where it's at. I want to encourage listeners who are interested in getting involved to go to a couple of different websites. So one is my group, Physicians for a National Health Program, and we are pnhp.org. So that's P as in Peter, N as in Nancy, P as in H as in healthcare, and P as in Peter, .org. Another is healthcarenow.org. That's healthcare, all one word, hyphen, now.org. And there is a group, I know it's not local to you, it's a group in San Francisco that is involved in your part of the world, and they're called Single Payer Now. And you can go online to singlepayernow.net. So it would be great if people want to get networked in and find out what you all can do. That's how to do it.
Okay.
And those of you who get a copy of my book, that information's at the back. But pnhp.org will really give you a window into local activity, grassroots organizations, and what you can do right now. This is the time, folks. We really need to be on this right now because they are making that sausage in Washington, and it isn't at the moment the sausage that we would like to be fed.
Okay.
We need to change that.
Terrific. I want to remind listeners, this is a Pledge Drive show. If this show interests you, any of the other shows interest you, please call in your pledge, 265-9555. 1-800-355-5867. Martha, do you have any closing remarks? We're still trying to get Ralph Nader on the line. So.
Oh, I didn't realize he had not been on.
Nope, he hasn't.
He
had to cancel on us.
Well, he has been a wonderful supporter of single-payer health care over many years. In fact, his organ, I shouldn't say this, but they also are supportive of our book. And... closing remarks, I would just say, folks, do what you can do. Sometimes people demand that you go and lie down in front of a bus or get arrested or whatever. Some folks in the movement are doing some of that. In fact, we had 13 doctors, nurses, and activists who were actually arrested in Senator Baucus's hearing on health care. And we have since spoken to Senator Baucus, and he has said that he would do what he can to get those charges dropped. Isn't that nice of him?
How magnanimous of him.
Well, he's the person who called the guards to have them arrested.
How magnanimous he is.
Exactly. But the point is, if that's not what you can do, if what you can do is make a phone call, that's great. If what you can do is send an email, that's great. If what you can do is be
okay, thank you, Martha.
Movement, yes.
Thank you very much for being our guest, and we're now going to switch focus. So thank you.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Ralph Nader, do we have you on air?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thank you for joining us in KVMR. Ralph, over the years, you've been the champion of any number of causes for the people, and I'm sure you have to choose your battles. Why did you choose to get involved in the battle for single-payer health care?
Well, this has been a long-time struggle. I remember reading about President Harry Truman proposing something like this, and in 1950 to Congress, and the American Medical Association was just too powerful. They overpowered the counterforce of the labor unions and defeated it. And we've been waiting ever since. And there have been over a million Americans who have died because they haven't had health insurance in this country. Now, just think of that. At least a million Americans. Where do I get this figure? Well, the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Sciences, estimated that 18,000 Americans a year die because they don't have health insurance. That's health insurance. And that is the lowest figure. There are figures that are that will be coming out soon that are much higher.
Okay.
So we're dealing here with, you know, 60-some years of a neglect, to put it mildly. Unlike all Western countries, nobody dies in Canada or France or Germany or Sweden or England because they don't have health insurance. They're insured from the day they're born. The only type of insurance that will work when you want to cover everybody, everybody in, nobody out, is you have to take away the profit-seeking health insurance companies, replace them the way Medicare did for the elderly in our country, and have a single payer. That means the government is the health insurer, and you are insured from the day you're born, and you have your free choice of doctor and hospital, and it's private delivery of medical services. So it's public funding, private delivery. More efficient.
What happens to all of these people that are going to lose their jobs because they're busy making money off of health care?
About 2 million will lose their jobs from companies like Aetna and all the some of the accounting firms that are engaged in all the billing morass, much of which leads to waste and fraud. However, there will be more jobs opening up, and a lot of them are similar jobs, by expanding health care coverage to 50 million men, women, and children. So, you know, they're going to need accountants and bookkeepers and health care workers and so on.
So they can do their same jobs on our side rather than opposing us.
Not exactly the same. In some instances the same, but it'll take some retraining. And the better single-payer proposals have actually anticipated your question, and they have a conversion program for people who will lose their jobs.
Terrific. It seems like the majority of American people are in favor of single payer. The majority of our supposed representatives are not in favor of single payer. What can we do?
Majority of the people, majority of nurses, majority of doctors, majority of health economists in polls show they're for single payer. I would say a very large number of Democrats are for single-payer, but they're what we call latent single-payer advocates. Other than the 79 who have signed on in the House of Representatives on H.R. 676, which is a single-payer proposal, these people, like Nancy Pelosi and others, don't think it's practical. So even though they believe in single-payer, they're going to go for another.
What the hell does that mean, they don't think it's practical?
It means that they don't have the courage to mobilize existing public sentiments, as Lincoln used that phrase, public opinion, mobilize it back in the districts where they have pretty safe seats, most of them, and the franking privilege, and they can have free communications and internet and in the mail, and bring it back to Congress and defeat the hundreds of lobbyists that represent the big HMOs, the commercial HMOs, the big insurance companies, drug companies, medical equipment companies. In other words, they're lazy. They want to go the path of least resistance, although they know it's not going to fix the problem. It will just be some patchwork of billions of taxpayer dollars on top of a volcanically rising, costly, cruel, and wasteful healthcare industry.
Okay, Ralph, what do you see as what's the major argument against single payer, and how would you counter that argument?
The major arguments are bizarre. They're like, it'll create bureaucracy, it will ration care, and it will be inefficient. But that's exactly what the system is today. You don't have your choice of doctor. The paperwork is monumental for doctors. The billing fraud is over $200 billion a year, as Malcolm Sparrow, the professor at Harvard University, has documented. And rationing care? How about 50 million people without any health insurance? That's rationing care. How about overloaded emergency rooms in poor areas? That's rationing care. You can't even get an emergency room, and you spend 10, 12 hours waiting in some of these places. How about all the deaths and injuries that aren't the deaths that are caused by a lack of health insurance, or the injuries and sicknesses that are never treated, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them? So the way to rebut it is just to basically say, what? What are you proposing instead? The existing system? In France and Germany and Canada, they have better health outcomes, lower infant mortality. It's more efficient. We spend twice as much in this country per capita on health care and as they do in Switzerland or Canada or Germany, and they cover everyone in their countries, and we cover you know, maybe 200 million people.
Okay.
Out of 300 million.
One of the major arguments is, boy, this is going to be expensive and our taxes will go up. How would the government pay for this if we had government funded insurance?
Well, they're already paying. They were already paying. It's just a matter of shifting who gets paid. When you spend $7,500 a year per capita on health coverage in this country, on health care, and 50 million aren't even covered, you're already paying. It's just a matter of, instead of paying Aetna through the nose, instead of paying these incredibly high bills of hospital care, et cetera, drug prices, you shift it over to public single payer. You have quality and cost control. You know, no more $15,000 for six treatments for Taxol for a drug that was developed with taxpayer money by the National Cancer Institute and was given free in a monopoly marketing agreement to Bristol-Myers Squibb. So there's just huge... Wait, listen to this one. The Bureau of the Budget Director for President Obama said that if there weren't these fantastic variations between what an exact same operation or procedure costs in a place like McAllen, Texas, which is the highest in the country on the Mexican border, and a place like Akron, Ohio, we'd save $700 billion. Listen to this. $700 billion out of the $2.5 trillion that we're spending this year. That's just one saving. And there are others, too, $230 billion in health care billing fraud and abuse, and $350 billion in administrative expenses that are replaced by single payer. That's why countries in Western Europe that are democracies, they have high wages. That's why countries in Western Europe can cover everyone for $3,500, $3,600 per year instead of $7,500.
Okay. Ralph, I want you to take a breath just for a second while I remind listeners this is a Pledge Drive show. We're honored to have Ralph Nader as our guest right now for a few minutes. Please phone in your pledges either now or when we're done. Phone in your pledges to 265-9555 or 1-800-355-5867.
I urge you to do that. You don't hear this kind of documented talk on Fox Radio.
Certainly not.
And also, if people want to really get involved in single payer, there's a real new direct action group that's been making headlines. Just log in, visit singlepayeraction.org, singlepayeraction.org. Sign up on their email list. You know, watch what they're doing. They want action in every congressional district where you all live. Right, focused on each member of Congress. No intermediary, direct focus by name, pickets, demonstration, visits, all peaceful, on your senators and representatives.
Terrific, because that answers my next question, and that is, what can listeners do if they want to get involved in this issue?
That's it, singlepayeraction.org. We're involved in it. We know where it's going. It's very good material. Also, the videotapes of their standing up in the Senate Finance Committee and saying, you got 15 witnesses here, Senator Baucus, not one represents single payer, and that's the majority position in America. And they were carted out by the Capitol Police and arrested. And these were nurses and doctors. We're seeing the beginning of a nurses and doctors protest. They're sick and tired of practicing bookkeeping and having their hands tied by commercial corporations as to how they can treat their patients.
Okay. While we've got a few more minutes, what are some of the other excuses and rationales for not having single payer, and how would you counter them?
Well, one is that it's socialism. That is.
Oh, my God. I'm not sure we can use that word on the air, Ralph.
Wall Street can't use it. Socialism has saved Wall Street on the backs of U.S. taxpayers without any consent by those taxpayers. So, you know, there are buttons now on Wall Street, and the buttons are, we're all socialists now. Sort of a dark humor, huh? No, they're really, there are some wild claims, like it will restrain medical research innovation. Are you kidding? Over half of the research and development in medicine in this country has been funded by the National Institutes of Health, the U.S. taxpayer. That's one reason why we're ahead of the rest of the world in a lot of research and advanced medical care systems. But they're not distributed to the people whose taxes paid for it.
Okay. What would another rationale be for not having this horrible single-payer system and sticking with our wonderful system we have?
That we need the Obama-type plan because it's quick. It can get through Congress. If we go through single-payer, the juggernaut medical-industrial complex will block it. Well, you know, that's been going on for 60 years. So if you believe that, you'll believe it for another 60 years. Somehow the Gordian knot has to be cut. There has to be a mobilization, and no one better can mobilize than people who are working in the medical, nursing, public interest law area that are involved in direct action and dissemination of information, how you can do it in your congressional district, and that's singlepayeraction.org. And once they get senators and representatives beginning to mobilize the folks back home, then they really are getting there.
Okay. Bill and Hillary Clinton supposedly tried to give us a health care plan when they first came into office. In your opinion, were they genuine? Were they really trying to achieve anything, or were they just grandstanding?
It was very complex. Nobody really could even convey an explanation of it. It catered too much to compromise with drug companies and health insurance companies. And as a result, instead of winning votes, it went down in flames. It didn't have that authenticity, that clarity that people want in health care reform. Now, it just so happens that both Bill and Hillary Clinton were latent single-payer advocates. In fact, Hillary admitted it many years ago. But, again, it's not practical. So it's not practical to go after the tobacco industry. They're all powerful in Washington. Really? Who's saying that now? It's not practical to have an arms control agreement where the Russians and Americans are exchanging visits to inspect dismantling of nuclear warheads in each country. Well, they are now. I mean, that's history. The progress of justice is to take the impossible, turn it into the probable, and then turn it into reality.
Terrific. Do you have anything further to say on this issue?
That's all, except just support this radio station, folks. Doesn't take much, you know, delete that next double-barrel cheeseburger. Send it to the radio station.
Okay, and you're suggesting that if people want to get involved, one good way to do that is with a website called singlepayeraction.org.
Singlepayeraction.org.
Ralph Nader, thank you very much for the time and being our guest on KVMR.
Thank you, and thank your listeners. Bye
okay,
now.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Ralph Nader. He's done his part. Now it's your chance to do your part. Phone in your pledge to 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. I want to thank Bill of Carmichael, California. I want to thank Cindy Sherbeck. She's from Nevada City. Cheryl, thanks very much to Cheryl. And thanks to Paula Orloff of Nevada City.